I think especially as a nurse, because I have seen birth in the hospital, that really influenced my decision. Not that those experiences weren't beautiful. Anytime a life is created and born, it's like the most amazing thing. But I did feel like it was just a conveyor belt of like women going in and having the same experience, and it was medicalized. There were lots of interventions that I didn't feel like needed to be done. And I just remember thinking, like, I want to experience it as I was created to, like as my body was made to experience it, I want to experience birth that way. And I just had this desire to know what that was like, this peaceful way that we were intended to birth. I just knew home was my best shot at that.
My name is Lisa, mother of seven and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch, cooking, and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way. Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Today, I am having on Erin. She shares over on Essentially Erin on Instagram, natural living content like raw milk, home birth, all of those things that we talk about a lot on this podcast. She's also pregnant with her fifth, and I don't remember when this one's coming out. So maybe she's had the baby, and I'm pregnant with my baby as well. So we're going to be talking about our decisions both to have home births and a little bit about pregnancy and homesteading. So let's dive in. Well, thank you so much, Erin, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I want to talk about a few things. One is pregnancy, home birth, all of that fun stuff, because you and I know this will go up later, and I have such a hard time like not bringing up things that to make this like appropriate for when it's going to come out. But whatever. Right now, at this exact moment, I'm 39 weeks pregnant. So when this comes out, I'll have like long had the baby. But oh well, you and I are both pregnant. You'll be really close to your due date probably whenever this comes out. But I believe we're both planning home births. And then also, you moved from California to Tennessee to start a homestead. So we're going to talk about that too. So let's start with introductions. Tell us about you and your Instagram and your homestead and your family.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I'm excited. So my name's Erin. I am a registered nurse, although I am retired. I stopped working when I had my first baby so I could stay home and raise her and have lots of babies, which we've done at this point. I'm pregnant currently with our sixth. My fifth, I have a stepdaughter who's 14. So together we have six children, including this one that's in my belly, my number five. I guess I wasn't born in California, but pretty much lived there since the time I was like 6 years old. My whole life, went to nursing school there, graduated, met my husband, we got married, and then, yeah, just lived there. And then in 2020, we decided, with everything going on, especially in California, with COVID and the response that happened, that we just wanted more independence, more self-sufficiency. And so we started kind of looking at where we could go and what would allow us to have that, and ended up landing in Tennessee. That's a whole journey in itself, but we're in Tennessee now. We've been here since, 2020, and just kind of dove right into homesteading and bought a cow within the first 6 months and chickens and just kind of went for it. So that's, in a nutshell, my story. But yeah, obviously there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, exactly. That's the big picture. What's funny is Erin and I, we had the chance to meet at a Carly Jean Los Angeles brand dinner. And when we were there, I think I talked to maybe like 10 people total. And I would say 8 of 10 had moved from other states, like I know California was several, but then there was several that were other states as well, to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. How common is this? Like, is this just a weird sample size that I encountered, or is this something that you're coming across all the time?
No, I mean, I think the exodus out of California, especially, I mean, just that table we were sitting at that event,
yeah,
there were like, yeah, three or four other girls that had come from California to Tennessee specifically. And I think it is like there's a mass exodus out of California, and Tennessee is considered a state, you know, where it is a little bit more free and there's better laws for homeschooling families and for families in general, for parents. It's more parent choice friendly. you know, the soil is great. There's lots of rain. I think for like homesteading and just preparedness in general, it's a great place to land. And so for whatever reason, it seems like it was like Idaho, Tennessee, and Texas got like this influx.
Yes, I've heard Idaho a lot too. That's so funny.
I know. It's those three states. I don't know what it is, but
yeah. So I live in Missouri, which is just north of Tennessee. It's not super far from Tennessee, but I definitely have not encountered all of these people who have moved from California here. I'm sure it's happening to an extent, but that was really weird at that place to meet all of these people. Yeah. And I guess it was a weird sample because it was like Carly Jean's from California, so that probably had something to do with it. But I'm like, this is so strange.
It is. No, it's strange for me too. Yeah, like I saw just on my Instagram, right, because I'm from California, so a lot of my audience is from California, and I see people like every day being like, I'm moving to Tennessee. And,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot. I don't know what the draw is to Tennessee exactly, but it seems like there's something.
Well, I think it's, whenever you're from California, you've heard of Tennessee because of Nashville, whereas like Missouri, even though I'm sure it's very similar because we're just north. I mean, I've grown up here my entire life, so what do I know? But it doesn't have a cool city. I mean, I guess Kansas City is kind of a cool city, but I think that people like you've heard of Nashville, Tennessee. So it's like, okay, well, there's the Midwest, but with like a cool city, maybe. I don't know, it's just my theory.
Yeah, that could be it. I think that there could be something to that. Like, yes. It's familiar, whereas really states like Oklahoma, who goes there? Kansas, Missouri,
Iowa,
which are probably
Illinois.
Great states, but like, yeah. What's there? There's nothing there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and you wouldn't go to Illinois. Like, if you're trying to go to a state that's more, you know, allows more things, all of those states have that. But I guess Tennessee also has this, like, you've heard of it. People travel there for cool brand dinners like Carly Jean, whereas, you know, we probably don't have that going on in Missouri.
Yeah. And there's like 50 country songs about Tennessee.
Yeah.
Plus, at least, you know, exactly. Like so many. Yeah.
Yes. Sure. Okay. So we'll go into home birth and all that, but we actually got a lot of questions about the California to Tennessee thing. So we can start there and the homesteading.
Yeah.
So, what was your experience like moving across the country, not knowing anyone, not having any friends? I forget if you have any family there at all, or if Tennessee was relatively random, but just fit the different qualifications that you were looking for.
Yeah. So the basic story there, it's been a journey, obviously, but we weren't even considering Tennessee initially. We were trying to stay because all our families in either California or Nevada or Utah, like more West Coast. And so we really did want to stay by family. And Tennessee wasn't even on our radar. We were looking at Arizona, Utah, Idaho, just somewhere kind of on that side of the continent. But how it turned out with my husband's job, so he is part of his family's business. They have a packaging company and they actually have East Coast distribution here in Tennessee. And so the way it all worked out and the timing of it all, basically, we landed here because of his job. And that was kind of like our only choice at the time was Tennessee. And so we're like, okay, I guess we're going to Tennessee. When we moved, none of our family, I actually convinced my parents to come with us because I lived by them in California. My other brothers, I had a brother in Southern California, a brother in Nevada, and a brother in Utah. So they lived by me. And so they're like, well, we're going to come with you. I convinced them and brought them along. But pretty much that was it when we moved. We said bye to everyone, like see you in a few years. You know, we don't know when we're coming back. But what has happened, which has been so interesting, is since we've moved, my husband's parents have bought a place about 10 minutes from us. I have a brother who moved an hour from me. So he lives in Tennessee now. And two of my husband's siblings have actually bought houses. They're about an hour and a half from us. So now we only have one family member in Tennessee or in California, and everyone else has pretty much come out this way.
Huh.
So that's been like, I think, unique and a huge blessing. Like, even though they're, you know, an hour, it's still nice to be able to get together with family and at least have that familiarity. We never, ever, ever, ever expected that to happen. So that was kind of wild. It was like within 6 months of us getting here, everyone's like, oh, we're coming too. We're like, what? Okay, come on over, you know? Yeah. So that was fortunate, I think, for us. And probably won't happen with everyone, but you never know. Sometimes it just takes one person leaving, you know?
Yeah. And especially if everybody else had similar goals that you couldn't accomplish mm-hmm. in California. So with Tennessee, what's the differences as far as for starting a homestead and what do you love about it?
Oh, gosh. Well, for one, it's much cheaper than California, right? Like we could sell our house in California and buy something for way less, double the size of the house. You know, we had a half acre in California. Here we have over 40 acres for half of the price of what we sold our house for. So you're just immediately like,
okay,
that's an improvement, right?
Yeah.
The soil is amazing out here. Things just grow. It's like a jungle.
It rains.
It's similar to Missouri. I've been to Missouri. Like we have family in Missouri. And so, yeah, it's like you don't even have to really water things a ton and they just grow. Yeah, you get plenty of rain. So I think from like a sustainability and self-sufficiency aspect, it's just been really great in that way. California is not as much that way. It's very dry and, you know, there's lots of droughts and fires and it's expensive.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And just little things like when we first moved here, people are like, oh, bless your heart. You're new. Like we have all these trees on our property, right? It was very wooded. And so we asked, I remember us asking, okay, so like, what's the process for tree removal? Because in California, you have to get like a permit for every single tree. Usually have to like pay, you have to pay to cut down a tree, right? Like,
oh, wow.
And so we kind of got laughed at and they're like, if you want to cut down a tree, just cut down a tree. Like there's no rules. And we're like, oh, okay. So there was like an adjustment of like, you can do things on your property that we weren't used to. So
you can do what you want. I know people are always asking me, is that Dakota? I'm like,
code? Is there a code?
I mean, just saying, I don't know. We live in Missouri.
There's no codes.
And the whole like 2020 situation's another thing entirely. Yeah, that was very different. And and people saw things on the internet and they were like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I live in Missouri. Like, you don't understand. Yeah. We're not doing this anymore.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was wild, too, was because we moved in 2020. So California was still very like locked down and masks and just everything. And we moved here and it was like it didn't even exist. And so we felt this immediate like freedom, like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. You know, we can just be and not worry about what we were worrying about in California. So that was
I traveled to see a friend in Seattle in 2020. I'm trying to think, was it 2020 or was it 2021? It was probably 2021. Yeah. And I was like, oh my word. There was people like riding their bikes at the park. And by themselves. I'm like, what is going on here? So anyways, yeah. I want to take a break from this episode to tell you about my 5-day blogging challenge. So 7 years ago, I started a blog. And 2 years into that journey, my husband was able to quit his job. And we've been living on our homestead, raising our kids side by side. It was really a dream. And sometimes I forget, because it's been 5 years that we've been doing this side by side, just how crazy it is that we are able to do this because of a blog I started 7 years ago. I have a 5-day challenge where I like to help you figure out your strategy. It's a free challenge. We go through narrowing down your niche, crafting your brand, and coming up with a content plan for a successful blogging business. If this sounds intriguing to you, you can get that at bit.ly/5-day-blog-challenge. That's all lowercase and the 5 is the number 5. So bit.ly/5-day-blog-challenge. Again, it'll also be linked down in the show notes or the description box if you are watching over on YouTube. Okay, so since you lived all the way in California, and I'm sure you didn't want to make the journey several times, did you buy it sight unseen, or were you able to come out and look at it?
Yeah, so that was interesting, a little stressful. We put our house up for sale. We came out to Tennessee in, I think, June or July, July of 2020, just to check out this area specifically where we would be moving to for my husband's job, and to make sure that, you know, it felt good and we felt great about it. So we got back and we did a few things on our house and then listed it, and it sold really fast. So this was like, I think, August of 2020.
Which, and, yeah, stuff was crazy, I think.
Yeah. Still. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sold, like, we, yeah, sold in a couple days. So then we're like, okay, awesome. Now, where are we going to go? Like, we had nowhere to go. I think they wanted, like, we did, like, a month rent back. So basically, we had to be out of our house, like, in September sometime. It's hard to remember exact dates. But there was, like, a two-week period, I remember, where we had to be out of our house. And we didn't have anything, and nothing was coming up in this area. And so we're just like, what are we going to do? Like, we have no idea. And I just kept feeling like, you know what? Something's going to pop up. Like, the perfect house is going to come along. We don't need to stress about it. And we would be looking on Zillow every day. And I was like on the phone with my friend telling her this. And she's like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not worried about it. Something's going to pop up. And I got off the phone. I went downstairs and my husband was like, look at this house. And he showed me. And I just like, I just knew. I was like, that's our house. Like, buy it, you know, like, done. Like, whatever it takes, just get the house in it. We got the house. And so we never saw it before we bought it. We bought it, closed on it fairly quickly. We headed out here. We got out here, like, November 1st, I want to say. And my husband had driven a trailer load out, like, a week before we moved. So he'd seen it. And, you know, he came to sign the papers and whatever. But me and my kids hadn't seen it when we showed up here. It was just like, oh my, the weirdest That's feeling exciting. To be like, yeah, yeah, it was so exciting. It was also just like, I hope I love this house because,
right,
this, you know, this is going to be home for a while. So it was, yeah, it was an adventure for sure.
Yeah. I take great care in my home to source products that are healthy, natural, organic, that will promote overall health. Alongside cooking from scratch, there are some foundational things like clean water and clean air that are as important as any of these other things. Americans take about 20,000 breaths per day and spend an average of 90% of their time indoors. My kids, they spend a ton of time outside, but I spend a lot of time inside cooking. I try to keep the window open, but still, the indoor air that we breathe can be up to 100 times more polluted than outdoor air, according to the EPA. Indoor air pollutants can cause respiratory symptoms like sneezing, congestion, scratchy throat, and even more serious health problems like lung and heart disease. So what is the solution for this? I want to tell you about this podcast sponsor, Air Doctor, the air purifier that filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so your lungs don't have to. This includes allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses. We have an indoor cat, we have pollen, and who knows what else around our house. So this just gives me peace of mind knowing that running Air Doctor will get rid of 99.99% of dangerous contaminants. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code farmhouse and you'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Lock this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code farmhouse. What were you looking for in your homestead? Like, how much acreage? What were some of the things you had to have?
Okay, good question. So one, I wanted just a house that would be comfortable for a large family, you know, and that was like good bones, because I feel like in rural parts of Tennessee, I'm sure Missouri, you can get into some really terrible houses. So just the structure of the house was really important. We wanted at least like 20 acres was kind of like our minimum. I think we could have had less, but that was just what we were looking at and ended up with a little over 40. I had to be by a lake because we are a boating family. And so I was like,
okay,
we have to find a body of water where we can go boating. Right. That was like really important to me, which seems silly, but isn't silly because we just love it so much.
Yeah.
I wanted water on the property, like a, you know, if there was like a stream or something, like a natural water source was preferential. And then just like within a close enough distance to my husband's work, if he had to go into an office, and that was pretty much it. So it kind of gave us like a, you know, 20 to 30 mile radius of all those things. And we just looked within that, ended up finding something. It was very, it was honestly very led. It was like very led that we ended up right here in this house, in this spot. And like I said, the timing of everything, because as we were moving, it turned out we didn't need to be in Tennessee. It was like within 3 months that changed and we could have gone anywhere.
Oh, but okay.
We were still like, well, this is where we were led. So this is where we're going to go and just try it out, you know? But I think had we not been kind of forced here, we wouldn't have ended up here. So I feel like this is just where we were supposed to be, you know?
Yeah, it sounds perfect.
People
are asking also like what acreage you need for a homestead. And that really depends on a lot of factors, like what kind of ground it is. Like if there's a big field or pasture, then a lot less. But then if you have a lot of wooded areas, you need more if you're going to have like a dairy cow, for example. So it really does depend. What did you decide on would be like your first animals, and how did you decide on getting a dairy cow? That's just jumping right in.
I know, it really is. I know. And it's so funny too, because it's like define homestead. Like you can do so many things on like a half acre, right? Or
yeah,
even
exactly.
even our cow, she's now we have probably 5 acres like fenced in where we can let her roam. But initially we just had about a half acre. So we were getting her more hay and more alfalfa and more supplemental things. So I think you can do it on a relatively small or, you know, maybe an acre, I would say.
Yeah.
But yeah, it depends on what you want. Obviously, a cow, you want as much as you can. She, the cow, oh man, she's like the queen of this place. So she, we had friends over. It was, you know, maybe 6 months after we moved, and I was talking about how eventually that I wanted to get like an A2A2 Jersey cow because the milk is so good. It's such a good, you know, like for sustainability and self-sufficiency, it's just such an amazing resource to have your own milk cow. And so my husband and my friend just started like looking on Craigslist and found this cow. And I was like, wait. Like, I don't want to do it now.
I was just talking.
Like, this was an idea that I had for, you know, like a year. We didn't have fencing. We didn't have anything. We have no experience with cows. Like, I was just like, let's just wait a minute. But my husband was like, no, we're going to get the cow. Which he will tell
that
he will tell the story very differently. Like he says that I was the one that like made him, and I'm like, no, I did not. This was not me. Anyways, so he ended up going like that day to get her. I think we got her from someone in North Carolina, so he drove a ways to get her. And while he's gone, he's like, yeah, figure out fencing. We tried to put up this electric fence. The second we got her, she like tore right through it. So we're like, oh no. What are we going to do? It was like a few months of a big learning curve to go from being like in the suburbs of California to having a milk cow. But
yeah,
now, I mean, honestly, the first year there were multiple days a week where we're like, we're going to sell the cow. Like it's too much.
Did she come in milk already?
She came in milk with a calf. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
wow. Yeah. That is jumping.
Yeah. It was like right away, we're like milking, you know, trying to figure it out. And yeah, like I said, there were multiple days where we were like, maybe we jumped the gun. Like, Ben was like, we're going to get rid of her. I'm like, no, let's just hang in there. I think it'll be worth it. And now we're at the place where we're like, oh my gosh, where we can never move.
Yeah.
Like, we have to always have a cow.
Yeah. Where will we find much raw milk?
Yeah, and like, you know, if we ever want to go anywhere, it's got to be a piece of property where we can have a cow. So anyways, we love it. We love having her. She's great.
Yeah. So with the dairy cow, a lot of people have a lot of ideas about a dairy cow that it's not something that you can do if you have a large family or if you want to travel. It's just, it sounds very overwhelming to have a dairy cow. How did that end up transitioning from being something that felt overwhelming when you first started? Was it just the setup, or you got used to that as part of your daily routine, or how to use the milk, or like, how did that become something that you almost have to have now?
Yeah, good question. I think, yeah, initially we were not set up for it. And so
yeah, that it makes was a lot of difference.
Right away we had to get fencing up and like initially keep a place for her to be. And then just the learning curve in general with taking care of a cow. Once we weaned the calf, then we were milking her twice a day, which felt like a lot. Like that's twice a day milkings are a lot, you know, and especially like me, I'm slow at it. Ben now he can be done in 15 minutes, but I'm like out up there for an hour, like struggling, you know, my forearms are burning. So I think just the time factor and having a bunch of little kids and jobs and trying to squeeze in those couple hours a day where you're up there milking until he got fast at it. Once he got really good at it, then it became less. And then once we went to once a day milkings, I feel like that was a sweet spot for us where we're like, okay, like we don't have to be back at night. We have some freedom to like, you know, stay out till midnight if we want or whatever.
Right.
But we still have enough milk for our family and a little extra to sell. The other thing too was with twice a day milkings, it's like we were getting 4 gallons of milk a day, which is great, but we didn't have a lot of people to sell it to. And I'm like, what do I do with all this milk? Mm-hmm. So just like a lot of learning curves that made it feel overwhelming. But I feel like we've figured most of that stuff out.
Yeah.
As for travel, because we love to travel. And that's been my biggest thing is I'm like, I don't want to be tied down to anything. That has made it trickier. So that is one thing that we still struggle with. I'm sure you do. Like, do you have like a, what do you do?
Well, so for the most part, we just don't. The thing is what I always say is you have to make choices and there's always going to be some downside to it. And so I felt like for the amount that we travel, there's so much more, like I want the time when we're home because that's our actual reality is we are home 90% of the time. I want to build my life around what makes sense for that 90% of the time, even if it makes like the other 10% or less, like honestly, way less than that, difficult or whatever, or, you know, more enjoyable. And so it's a thing, like we're talking about going to this homestead expo in August and I'm speaking at it. It's down in Southern Missouri. And we're like, oh, okay, well maybe we'll get a hotel and we'll like make a weekend of it. And then all of a sudden we're like, wait a minute, forgot about something. There's something we forgot. And so like, okay, that did come up and there's really nothing we can do. Like there's not, I could maybe find somebody in the area. I haven't. And so whenever the cow's in milk, yeah, that is a thing. But that's like once in a year, you know, and I can handle it by myself. So like, for example, Luke and my oldest two went to Alaska last week for 10 days. And so I was home with the other kids and I can manage it or he can manage it. So like with the Homestead Expo, we decided that probably he'll stay home with our 5, 3, and 1-year-old, and I'll take the oldest 4 and the baby and then let them run around the Homestead Expo and he'll handle home. It's definitely a compromise. I mean, it would be cool if we could all go, but also would it, like, we're going to take a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, like we're already not mobile. So it already wouldn't have really been fun, you know, to take the entire crew to a hotel room. So we just, you know, there's just certain things. And my daughters, the 14 and 12-year-olds, they can milk 100% by themselves. So like if, you know, Luke and I want to go on a date night and we don't want to milk when we get home or whatever, they can handle that. So we just make it work. I mean, there is some limitations, of course.
Right. And it's always about like what you value and what you prioritize, right? So like depending on how much you prioritize, like you, I really value the self-sustainability and like being home with my family, having a slower paced life, but also liking to travel. So we figured out we have people that we can trust that will come over and do it for us if we do want to travel. Like we've kind of made it a priority to find that. So
yeah,
it doesn't always happen and I don't get to travel as much as I want to, but it happens enough that I like kind of have the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And as far as like the time it takes to milk, you're so right that you get used to it. And if you're set up, so like now we have our milk stanchion, it's set up to where our cow literally just when we open the barn door, like comes right in.
Walks in, yeah.
And I can milk her by myself in less than 20 minutes. When it's me and Luke together, it's 10 minutes.
So fast.
So it just doesn't feel like a huge time commitment, honestly. Mm-hmm. For us, it's definitely worth it, but it's not for everybody.
It's not for everyone, for sure. But I think if it's on your heart to try it, like try it, you know, you can always sell the cow. You can always stop. But I think you don't know until you try. I never would have thought I wanted my own milk cow until we got a milk cow and gave it some time. Right. I would say the first year.
Yeah. Or try so. It for a while because the first, yeah. Even with a cow that's experienced, like our cow, she's had 2 calves here, but whenever you dry them off for a few months and we go back to milking her, it's still like as if she's never been milked in her entire life. And so there's that like 2 weeks of this is terrible. Like she steps in the milk, we have to throw it out. But then
we haven't gone through that yet.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's a new thing every time.
We're still trying to
just a week or two
get ours pregnant. Well, it's just like us, right? Every time I have a baby, I'm like, What am I doing? I mean, you pick it up fast, but it's like,
yes,
you're sore and you're spilling milk and you're oversupplying. And
exactly. Yeah. And I almost forget every time, like one of my younger sisters has her first baby and she's 4 months old. And so she's always like, well, what about at this age? And I'm like, I don't even remember. I know I just had 7 kids and one of them's only 1.5. And yet I still like, I figure it out as I'm going through it. All over again, like I've never done it. I mean, there are certain things, of course, I remember, but there are certain things that I almost have to be in it again to even recall. And I'm always able to figure it out. And yeah, you get used to it, you get a rhythm.
Well, and everyone's a little bit different too, right? Like every baby's a little different, and just it's different every time. So
yes. I want to take a break from this episode to tell you about one of my favorite sponsors, and that is Tubes & Co. Tubes & Co. makes natural and organic skincare products that don't make you compromise on the quality. So they use ingredients that don't have anything synthetic or any of those chemicals that you find on the list of things to avoid, like most products. Yet they actually work really great. I have a full face of Tubes & Co. makeup. And of course, you can go more made up by using the bronzer and the highlighter. I usually, a lot of times on my daily wear, just do the foundation, sometimes the concealer, the mascara, I absolutely love. And then I'm really into their eyebrow pencil because I'm not a makeup artist, and it makes it really easy for me to do the whole eyebrow thing without really knowing what I'm doing. It has a little brush on the end and then a liner on the other side that's angled and makes it really easy. They also have amazing skincare products. I love their tallow balm. It's incredibly moisturizing, yet uses tallow from grass-fed cows, which you wouldn't think to use tallow on your face, or maybe you do now because it's definitely gotten more popular. But the way that it actually makes its way into your skin versus an oily-based thing like a coconut oil that I've done in the past that sits on top is incredible. It works so much better than a lot of the other natural moisturizers that I've tried. Plus, they have some really amazing scents. They also have cleansers, toners, the full line of facial care, but in an organic and natural way that you don't have to worry about what's actually in it. A lot of times, you know, we have these lists of things that we should avoid, and then whenever we look at all of our favorite products, they have them. You don't have to worry about that with Tubes & Co. It's nourishing, organic ingredients. Very simple yet effective. I'm not a lipstick wearer, but they have beautiful lines of lipstick. So if you are someone who likes a bright, punchy lipstick, but you're worried about all of the stuff going in, they have some wonderful nourishing lipstick as well. Tubes & Co. is offering Simple Farmhouse Life listeners 10% off by using the code FARMHOUSE. So head on over to tubesandco.com and use the code FARMHOUSE to stock up on some organic, nourishing, amazing skincare. Okay, well, with that, let's talk about pregnancy. Did you do home births when you were in California? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I did. Yes. So my first home birth was my first baby, which was 2013.
Okay.
Which like, I think we talked about this when we were together, but like in 2013, I was on social media, like YouTube wasn't really a thing.
Yeah.
Like, No one was doing home births my age, especially like, no, like I was 28 with my first, no one. So everyone thought I was like nuts, mm-hmm. you know, but
right.
Yeah. I had her in 2013 at home, and then I had another in 2015, 2017, 2020. And now
I had home births in all those years too.
Did you?
Yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't until after my second that I got like on social media and started educating on just random things as a nurse on my platform. And then really I'd say since 2020 is when I've seen like the home birth movement kind of like pick up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's,
yeah.
And maybe that's just in my circle, but it seems like it's becoming a little more common, which is great.
It is.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. I know sometimes whenever I do topics like this on the podcast, it's like I feel like because of the worlds that I hang out in, that a lot of topics are just overdone. But there are people who, you know, like they're still wanting to discover home birth, you know, mm-hmm. it's not like I forget that, you know, there's just because I started doing this, you know, I've done this already, that there's not still people that need to be or want to be convinced or whatever. So what are some of the reasons that you decided to pursue a home birth, especially on your first?
Yeah, great question. And I just wanted to say, yeah, I'm with you. I feel like it's so my norm in my world, but it's really like, I wanted to say less than 1% of women give birth at home in America. I can't remember the exact statistic.
Yeah, I forget that it's still controversial, to be honest. Like I still forget whenever I talk about it, there's still going to be those comments who are like, you're insane.
Yeah.
This is nuts. And I'm like, oh, wait, what world are we're living in different worlds.
Totally. Yeah. Anyways, well, I mean, I get this question so much, I think, especially as a nurse, because I have seen birth in the hospital. I didn't work on a L&D unit, but I did in school. I went through that rotation for, you know, months and saw plenty of hospital births and did the Pitocin and the epidural and all those things, right, for my patients. So very, I guess not experienced, but I know what birth in the hospital looks like, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think because of that, that really influenced my decisions was not that those experiences weren't beautiful. And, you know, anytime a life is created and born, it's like the most amazing thing. But I did feel like it was just very like a conveyor belt of like women going in and having the same experience. And it was medicalized and there were lots of interventions that I didn't feel like needed to be done. And, you know, the mom's on her back, which I learned in nursing school even is not an ideal position for pushing out a baby. And she can't feel things, like she's numb physically. And I think maybe even a little bit emotionally, because of just everything that's going on that's keeping her from experiencing that as nature intended, right? That's just like what happens physiologically. And I just remember thinking like, I want to experience it as I was created to, like as my body was made to experience it, I want to experience birth that way. And I just had this desire to know what that was like. And that was I was like 22. It wasn't even, you know, I wasn't married. It wasn't on my radar, but I just remember thinking like, I think when it comes to be that time, I want to have home births. I just knew that that was my best shot at having a birth that was untouched. It was just this peaceful way that we were intended to birth, right? Like at home, surrounded by people we love. It's quiet. It's peaceful. There's not a lot of intervention. I just knew home was my best shot at that. And so that was what I ended up choosing. And it's been great. I've loved all my birth experiences. So
yeah, I get so much pushback when I share my birth stories because, and this is by no means everybody, I'd say it's definitely way more widely accepted today, But a lot of people think that the mm-hmm. only reason you're choosing home birth is for the experience. You'll get these women say, yeah, but I'm not worried about the experience. I care about my child. And I'm like, you have to understand that if you've chosen home birth, we also care about our kids. And we've chosen this with, you know, it also being the priority that we have healthy babies. And we may not agree on what it takes, or, you know, mm-hmm. to achieve that outcome.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that's far less talked about is the fact that, you know, in America, we have a terrible rate of not only C-section, which some people will, don't care about C-section. They think it's fine and whatever, but there's a lot of risk that comes along with a C-section for you and your baby. We have an astronomical, I think it's like over 35% at this point, rate of cesarean in this country. We have one of the lowest rates for good outcome for maternal and for babies for postpartum in terms of like depression and just general health and even death rate. So like what we're doing in America isn't, it's not really great for birth. Like our numbers aren't great. And if you look at, there was that midwife, I don't know if you saw it, but it was done years ago, I think in 2019, maybe, a MANA study by the Midwife Organization, where they took 17,000 women who birthed at home, and the outcomes were actually far better than they were for hospital births in terms of good outcome for mom and baby, breastfeeding at 6 months, all these factors they looked at were better than hospital. The outcomes were better. So there's risks with everything, right? And there's risks right. with driving your car down the road. There's risk with literally everything. But in the hospital, you're kind of entering into this world where you're plugged into, like I said, almost like conveyor belt medicine. And there's risk with all those things. There's risk with epidural. There's risk with Pitocin. There's this kind of like cascade of interventions that happens when you start messing with birth that can lead to, and I hear the same story all the time, right? Mom's on oxygen, baby's in distress.
Well, I experienced that with my first.
Did you?
I mean, I did the whole thing. Yeah. I did literally like, if you could probably without me even telling it to you, just tell me what happened with my mm-hmm. first birth. That was how, and because I've heard so many birth stories, and yeah, there's for to just assume that because you make a certain choice, you're doing the risk-free thing is very, very uneducated. It's
right.
The only reason I went that route is because I hadn't done any research. And I'm not saying that there aren't people who have chosen hospital after doing research. I know that there are, and there are valid reasons for that. But that is why I landed in the hospital. And there's just no risk-free choice. There's not. And so I've weighed on
that. Yeah. There definitely isn't, but I do, I mean, you have, yeah, like you said, this cookie cutter, almost traumatic birth experience that happens all the time, that I hear all the time, uh-huh. and it always starts with one yep. thing and ends in a certain
yeah,
way.
Yeah, you could totally
and
just
tell And so it's like, I'm sure I yeah. could. I hear the story, you know, every day. Mm-hmm. I didn't want, for me, I felt like the greater risk was being in that environment mm-hmm. for my birth, because I am of the opinion that birth goes better and more smoothly for me and baby when we just let it do its thing. You can't put birth on a protocol or a timeline or a clock. Right? It doesn't work that way. And the second you walk into those hospital doors, you are put on those things. Mm-hmm. And it's just not conducive to good outcomes for birth largely. So,
okay. So when do your babies come? Have they came on time?
I know you're 39 weeks. Like you're going to have your baby. This is crazy. So all of mine have come pretty close to my due. My first one was 6 days over. I was 40 and six. My second, okay. I was 40 and one.
Okay.
My third, I was 40 and three. And actually my fourth was on his due date. So
wow.
He's
yeah.
like that 5%, 5%er that comes on their due date. Yeah. I'm expecting this baby to come, you know, sometime the week of my 40 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm expecting too, because my last four have all came plus or minus 2 days. So very, very accurate. Yeah.
So are you 30? What are you right now? 39 and what?
I'm exactly 39.
Okay. Today. So in the next 5 days or so,
my
we'll
last was born 2 days before which really shocked me because he was the first one to come before the due date. Mm-hmm. The two before him came 2 days after. Three before him came 2 days after.
2 days after. Yeah, yes. I'm praying that this isn't the one that comes before my due date, because for this birth, my midwife is flying out from California to attend my birth. And she's coming out a week before. So I think we'll be safe, but I'm like, this little underlying, like, watch this be the one baby that comes like 2 weeks early and she like misses.
I always have birth, that fear. So. It's so funny on your fifth or eighth. Like, I had a couple cramps like 3 nights ago and I was like, oh no, like, no.
Yeah. I'm not ready.
I am not ready.
Yeah, no, I feel like in the end, those days are like precious. Like even for just mental prep, I'm like, I don't, I'm good with going beyond 40 weeks. Like
so good with going beyond 40 weeks.
Yeah.
And here I am 39 and I'm like, I am so good going beyond 40. I cannot believe that like I could possibly even remotely like go into labor. No way.
I know, not ready. Yeah.
No.
And they're in a lot of ways, like you're so relieved once they're here, but like you also know that it starts this whole new like unraveling of your life and putting it back together. Mm-hmm. It's like when they're inside, it's just easier sometimes.
It is. You know? I know you can't tell a first timer that, but it definitely is. Like life is just really normal. And we're trying to wrap our brains around that it's not going to be, because it just, it's weird how every time it's like you can't grasp what's going on until the baby's here. It's like I haven't fully thought about having a newborn and being in bed.
Like
for
you
two
can't
weeks.
Process that you're actually having a baby.
Never.
Like, it's like,
is
what?
That weird?
Never. Yeah.
Like, what's up with that?
It's not. I don't know. I'm like always like, until they're in my arms, it doesn't actually hit me that like I'm having a baby. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I did this. You're here. Like, it's just the weirdest thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think with my first, it wasn't like that. But
yeah, I don't feel like it was with my first either. But
yeah, I don't know what it is.
I don't know, but
maybe you're just so busy with the others that you just can't, you know, like you can only focus on the ones that are here because this one's taken care of.
Yeah,
so.
I guess. I watched my birth story with Theo last night that I'd put on YouTube just to like see a newborn and hear me talk about contractions. Because another thing is I usually at some point throughout my pregnancy get interested in birth and like listen to birth stories and, you know, mentally prepare myself. And I've done nothing like that. Like I have not hit the point yet of being interested. And I'm like, I am 39 weeks pregnant. Like maybe I should think about this coming, or maybe it's better just to not. Like what prep do you do to have a baby? Anything?
Honestly, I have the same experience where it's usually around, it's like around this time, like the 34 week mark, or I'll start to kind of like turn inward and like read birth stories and watch my birth.
Yeah, think about it. Yeah.
I'm not there either. So I don't know.
Well, it still didn't happen for me and I'm 39. And I just last night was like, I'm going to like just pull this up just to see me holding a newborn and like maybe get myself somehow like interested and then. I'm still not.
Oh, I keep waiting to feel that too. And I haven't yet. So I still have time, but yeah, 39 weeks. I don't know. Maybe you're not going to get there. Maybe it's just going to happen and maybe you don't need it, right? With your eighth baby, you're good.
Yeah. I mean, part of me is like the less thinking about it, the better probably. So maybe it's actually a good thing. I mean, I know what I'm doing.
Maybe
it's not like I need to.
Yeah. Maybe that's just what you need this time.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
You know.
My sister on her last baby, she had already had several natural births and she on her last one got this anxiety like in the last 3 or 4 days. And I haven't experienced that, but I've heard it's very common. Have you experienced that with any of yours?
I haven't. Usually I feel it earlier and then I kind of get to that point where I want to start diving into like the birth mindset and then I work through all that.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I haven't experienced it up leading up to birth like that. But I'm sure, I'm sure that's common. Like that's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And she had some difficult pushing phases before this one. And so I think maybe she said it really wasn't logical, though. She wasn't really worried about that. It was not like a conscious thought. It was just like a thing that happened. So I don't know if it was based on experiences, if it was just some kind of hormonal thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be hard. You know, you leading up to birth, you want to feel just ready. And peaceful and, yeah, not anxious.
Yeah. I figure no matter what, I'll get through it. And I really keep hoping that my water doesn't break. Have you ever had like your opening part of labor be water breaking? Me neither. And I'm like, I think that would mentally be really hard because it hasn't started, but you know it's gonna. Mm-hmm. That would, I think, throw me big time.
And also worth noting is once your water breaks, those contractions are like,
yes,
so much more intense, right?
Like, well, yeah, so
I'm always like, don't break my water,
yeah,
until like we have to, because it just really amplifies everything.
So I've only had one birth where it broke like 2 hours before I had him, and it was definitely harder. The other ones, it was like I was in labor when it broke, but with the other ones, it just breaks like as I'm pushing the first time.
As you're pushing, yeah.
And that is so much better.
So like, much better. Yeah. Agreed.
I can't imagine going through the entire labor with the water broken. So I'm just praying
that. We'll just channel that it's not going to happen.
It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. You'll have to text me when it starts.
Yeah. Well, I stay in denial for a while. So it's like, I don't even tell my midwives till, you know, they get here for like 10 minutes.
I've been there too. My midwives are always like, I kind of tell them what's going on, and they're like, do you want us to come? I'm like, no, I think it'll stop. Like, it's probably, you know, it's
probably nothing. Yeah, I'm sure it'll stop. Probably.
And they're like,
here I am 40 weeks pregnant.
They're like, we'd really like to come set things up so we're not like rushing. I'm like, okay, fine.
They know you.
Yeah.
They know you too well. So your midwife is traveling in when you're 39 weeks. And what if this is like, I know you're worried, like, what if this is the one that's 2 weeks early? What if it's the one that's like 2 weeks late?
Oh, man. I think because I haven't ever been that late, I just feel like I won't be. And also, you know, there's like herbs and things that you can do to kind of get things going.
Right.
So
yes.
I'm not too worried about that. But yeah, that would be interesting. She's retired, so she can stay as long as I need her to, really.
Okay. But, so she'd be good to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That would throw me too, because I'm at this point very used to being around the due date, that I would be thrown by that. I have had two kids that were a little bit over a week late, but have you heard about the link between large amounts of red raspberry leaf from 14 weeks on causing later births? Cause it's a thing.
No, I haven't.
And, So my sister and I, we've done our own little very small scale case study. And then I like pulled my Instagram community, and there actually has been studies on it. So that I believe that the reason those two boys were so late was because I consumed such large quantities of red raspberry leaf tea starting at around like 12 weeks pregnant.
Interesting.
So.
Okay. Well, I haven't had any of that, so hopefully we'll be good.
You should be good to go. Yeah. And before anybody messages me and says, my baby was not a week late and I drank red raspberry, you have to start really early, like not third trimester, not second trimester. Maybe really early in the second trimester.
Yeah.
You need to start like end of first trimester. And like when I tell you my sister and I took the red raspberry leaf tea very seriously, I mean like real seriously. Like we didn't have like little steeping bags. We bought like bulk herbs and put like cups in. So likely you have not consumed that amount. So if it didn't cause your baby to be late, then it's just really weird, because my sister and I have had 13 kids between the two of us, and she's had two really late and I've had two really late, and those were the only ones that we did that with.
Wow.
So
there you go. That's interesting. I've never heard that.
Yeah. Yeah. I dug into some studies whenever I realized, like after talking to people, like lots of people had the same story. So I realize that's not how studies are done, but this is what we got. And
I think you need to get that published on a larger scale.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Tell people where they can find you and what they can expect to follow along with your homestead, with, you know, natural living type of content.
Awesome. Yeah. So my Instagram is essentially Erin with 2 underscores at the end. You can find me there. My website is essentiallyerin.com, but most of everything I do is on Instagram. I share, you know, I kind of go in seasons depending on where my life is at right now. It's more about just homesteading and our life and day to day, but tons of information on my Instagram, you know, on different health topics, birth and just natural remedies, etc., that go back years and years. I've been doing this for a long time. So
yeah,
you can find me there. And yeah, getting ready to hopefully launch a birth course actually in the next little bit. So hopefully that will be helpful for people. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Well, that's like a fun thing to work on while you're at the end of your pregnancy. And then you can maybe conclude your course with like your 5th birth story.
Yeah. 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 That's kind of the idea.
Cool. So. Great timing. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Make sure to go over to Instagram and check out essentially Erin _. We'll also leave links down below to any resources that she mentioned in the show notes or the description box, depending on where you're watching. And I'll see you in the next episode.